a young man is often dressed lodging for the devil to dwell in. I recommend I know what massive letters go in between the devil and young blood. Satan hath a friend that court in the heart of the youth, and then pride, luxury, lust, revenge. Here, Duncan's father paused and looked steadily into Duncan's eyes before continuing. Revenge, forgetfulness of God, are hired as his agents. Happy is your soul of Christ, man the house, and take the keys himself, and command all, as it suiteth him full well to rule all wherever he is. Keep and entertain Christ well, cherish his grace, blow upon your own coal, and let him tutor you. Here his father stopped and looked again at his son. Defying hell's iron gate, my lad, means oh so much more than merely talking, taking your sword in hand against the enemies of the kirk. Ye might fight that battle, he paused, pleading firmness in his eyes. I say ye might fight that battle, as many have before ye, son. But in the end, lose the battle that matters. What battle? Said father, asked Duncan, knowing the answer. The battle for your soul. Aye, this may all come to blows, but see to it that your heart is right before God. Approach with like passion to the battle of your soul, and all with be well when it comes time for the grim duty of waging war in your hands. Enough now, called his mother from the little scullery. I'll be needing Duncan to fetch washing water. I'll not have my family going to the field meeting, looking and smelling like many sheep. That'll not. Duncan scowled at the thought as he waited his turn at the well, Broody doubtfully at his heel. That bit about revenge that his father had read to him. He stroked Broody's ears absently. It bothered him. He stepped aside as Dame McBride shuffled toward the well, her heavy cane more like a small cudgel, thump, thump, thumping on the hard-packed earth as she made her way. I'll draw for ye, Dame McBride, he said, reaching for her bucket. And the kindness it is in thee, lad, she said, pausing in her stomping shuffle and squinting up at Duncan. He had a way of holding up the knobbed end of her cane and eyeing around it, looking at you with only one eye as she talked with you. Duncan wondered what an old woman like Dame McBride could possibly have done to be now fugitive in the hills with the rest of them. Reports of plunder, oppression, and peasantry had increased. Reports had it that when someone was unable to pay a fine levied by Turner, another old woman had been publicly whipped through the village. Still another accounts told of more men scourged and sent to prison, and of boys whipped and shipped to the Barbados as slaves. He shuddered at the thought. They were cowards, all of them. He hated the English king and all who supported him. Revenge was exactly what he wanted. Now, laddie, whatever it is that makes you troubled on a day like today, she asked, pulling her face toward her for a better look. Duncan tried smiling, though with the old woman's hand pinching his face, his smile looked more like a grotesque bulging of lips and cheeks. All the while, her one wide eye goggled at him, and She held the cane menacingly close to his face. "Troubled?" said Duncan through disoriented lips. "Do I look troubled?" "Ah, you're troubled about something," she said, releasing his face and then giving him a slap on the cheek with her bony hand. "But ye have no cause for it, lad. Have ye not heard the news?" "What news?" replied Duncan, rubbing his face. "Why, the news about London town," she said, looking at him in amazement. "I don't ken much about London," said Duncan, "nor care to." "Aye, but you'll be caring to ken this," said the old woman, and went on, nodding knowingly. They've gone and fired the whole place." "What?" said Duncan, nearly dropping her bucket for of water. "Fired? You mean it's burned?"
"Aye, burned near to the ground. The English burned down London."
"But how could ye ken this?" asked Duncan, not looking doubtfully at her. "I have my sources, laddie, I do," she said, winking at him. I'm told it started more than a week ago, September the 2nd, and raged down on for 4 days, leveling nearly the whole cursed place. 80 of their popish kirks lie now in ruins. What more does the country deserve, led by likes of that fornicating, covenant-breaking Charles Stuart? Last day, it were a plague, killing off nearly 100,000 of the English." She spat at the word English, just like the ancient friar. "And now this," she shook her cane roughly in the direction of England. Did many of the English, did they die in the flames?" asked Duncan. He knew his father did not want him to hope that many did die, but he found it hard not to. "That's a question indeed," she spat again. "Few enough. 2 in 10, I'm told." With a disappointed shrug, she rammed her cane down into the dirt. When Duncan returned home, he told his father and mother about the great fire in London. "What does it mean?" he asked, unable to conceal his excitement. "I don't pretend to ken what it means," said his father. "But I do ken what our duty remains the same. All this lies securely in the ministry of God's all-wise providence, and we must be content not to ken what God is doing, only to obey. Maybe they'll stop oppressing the Kirk," said Duncan, though not really believing it. "They'll be busy enough rebuilding the place. Duncan's father looked sober. "Aye, but they'll be awaiting money to do their rebuilding with," said Duncan's mother bitterly. "Be sure of it, lad. They'll be hiring some dandy wiggled fellow to rebuild the whole place, all for a price. So the thieving's like to go on. For all their plundering, they gain silver. 50,000 pots Scots money is rumored they have gone and stolen from our poor people of the West Country already. But be sure of it, they'll carry on with their thieving in the name of the king, but shouldn't wonder if things won't now be worse than ever." "I shouldn't be wondering if you're right, woman," said Duncan's father approvingly. "But where sin abounds, grace abounds still more. Though poor in worldly goods, we have riches none can take from us, my love. But ye've heard how the bishop striped John Gordon and his brother Robert off all their riches and lands, and of John Nicholson, the coarse cop. All his estate and laid waste was forfeited to the crown. Along with his wife and bearings, he plunged from a life riches in honor of that vagrant wanderer. Why? I can, his wife said, close to tears. And Larry Nelson's godly wife
Mary McLean, highborn of the House of Barksop, was it so ill-used. They've stripped them of everything, and all for owning the covenant, for refusing to betray King Jesus. Peasant or noble-born, we're all servants of King Jesus, Duncan's father continued gently. And the servants not above his Lord, dear Mary. They striped our precious Lord Jesus of everything, and divided up his robes, and his very life he gave up. He predestined us of for glory, but that comes later. For now we suffer, like we lambs for the slaughter we suffer. So that was chapter 9. Bye guys, see you later. See you later, see you later, see ya. See ya later, bye guys!